Hey, if you're a journalist who uses the tool Help a Reporter Out, or Harrow, listen up. Harrow is moving to Cision's new app, Connectively. But what is Connectively? Well, imagine a place where you can quickly connect with expert sources for your next story. Connectively is a new app from Cision that's changing the way journalists like us, content creators, experts, and PRs work together. So if you're in search of credible sources, Connectively is your next stop. With just a click, you can publish your queries. These go straight to a feed where experts from loads of different backgrounds can respond, giving you their expertise. So go on, visit connectively.us to sign up for free. That's connectively.us. Connectively.us.
Hello and welcome to Freelancing for Journalists. I'm Emma, and in this series of the podcast, we're talking all about how to diversify your income.
Yes, and this week we're talking all about self-publishing and whether we should all be starting a Substack. But first, as always, we're going to do our win of the week. So Emma, what is your win?
Okay, so my win this week is I was at the end of a news shift on Monday, and a new commission came in that looked, at first glance, I thought, oh, this looks really complicated. I don't think I want to take this on, even though it was quite a well-paid commission, potentially. But when I looked in more detail, it was actually a topic that I'd written about quite a lot in the past. So I do have that kind of background knowledge already. There's a certain amount of research that I'm not going to need to do. I can just go back and refresh my memory from the previous pieces I'd written. So in the end, I said yes. I thought that was actually quite... I was like, oh yes, this is actually going to be easier than it might look at first thought. So I was quite pleased it had come in the end.
Yeah. It's always nice when you've got those things that you've got the expertise in already and you can just get it done and it's not as big a deal as you thought.
Yeah, because if you were starting from scratch, the topic would be a really complicated thing to get your head around. So yeah, it was good. What's your win of the week?
So mine is, I know I'm always banging on about press trips. So I get invited on a lot and I can very rarely make it. But I've been invited on another press trip, cleared it with the family. I can go. So hopefully, fingers crossed, this time I won't get COVID or nothing else is going to happen. I should be heading up to the Lake District in April to spend a couple of days running and learning about a particular race. And yeah, getting the lowdown on what they're doing. So it should be fun. And then I'm straight off after that to Snowdonia to run with some very scary, very good ultra runners, which, yeah, I am peeing my pants a little bit about. But yes, I've got the press trip to look forward to first before I get into the scary bit.
Fantastic. Fingers crossed you haven't jinxed it now by mentioning it.
Well, yes, that's what happened last time, but hopefully not. So let's introduce our guests, who both have lots of experience in self-publishing their own content in different ways.
Yeah, so today we have with us Claire Cohen, previously women's editor and features editor at The Telegraph. Claire is now a freelance journalist and author of BFF, The Truth About Female Friendship. Last year, Claire launched a Substack newsletter called Tell Me About It to share her writing, some free and some paywalled. So we're going to ask her all about that.
Yes, and we also have with us Darren Ann Finn, an award-winning author, journalist and podcaster. The runners amongst you, like Emma and I, may know him from his books Running with the Kenyans and The Rise of the Ultra Runners. Darren Ann also writes regular features for The Guardian, FT, Telegraph, Runner's World and others. And the reason we want to chat to him today is to pick his brains all about the writing he shares via Patreon and Substack.
Welcome both to the podcast. Some excellent expertise here. This is great. I mean, first off, I guess we should learn a bit more about you and about the self-publishing that you've done. So Claire, we'll start with you. Tell us first about how you got into journalism and now the different types of work that you do since you've gone freelance.
Yeah, so, well, hello, first of all. Thank you so much for having me on. I started a long time ago. I started when I was 16 by doing work experience at the Mail on Sunday, which was an incredibly fortunate thing to be able to do. And I'm afraid there's nothing more glamorous to it than I did that. I was incredibly shy and introverted and barely spoke to anybody for the entire 2 weeks. But I did get the names of several editors who I met, and I just badgered them for more work experience after that. And they eventually got so sick of me, they told me to come back in and what was it I wanted from them. And so I carried on doing work experience until I finished university. And then I got a lowly researcher's job and just carried on from there. So I've never done any formal journalism qualification. I don't have an NCTJ qualification. I guess I kind of learnt on the job, but, you know, for the majority of my career, I've been an editor, really. You know, I have written, but never as much as I wanted to. And the majority of my working life has been spent in, you know, newspaper staff jobs, coming up with ideas for other people to write and editing other people's words. So that was definitely a big driver behind my going freelance about 18 months ago. And my book that you kindly mentioned, BFF, had just come out. So that was really the first chunk of time that I'd actually been able to sit down for 3-4 months and write without doing any editing. And I do love editing, but that was quite a thrill for me and made me realise actually it was something I wanted to do more, and that maybe I needed to go freelance after 11 years at The Telegraph and give it a try.
Fantastic. So, and at what point did you decide to do the newsletter?
So it was about a year or so into my freelance life. So last summer, and I was aware of Substack. I'd had conversations with the UK team. Farah Storr, who's a former journalist herself, she used to be editor of Elle and of Cosmopolitan. She's kind of running the UK operation. And she had said to me, you know, I think this is something you'd really enjoy. Are you interested? And I thought, oh God, I haven't got time to take that on. You know, my first year of freelance, I'm just trying to get that off the ground and see if it'll work. But actually, a year in, I thought, maybe I do have time for this. And there are things that I really want to write that maybe don't have a natural home in the mainstream media and are maybe a bit more personal. So I decided to give it a shot.
Yeah, it's really interesting how so many journalists now are using Substack as a sort of self-publishing platform. Darren Ann, if we come on to you though, tell us a bit more about your kind of journey then into journalism and freelancing. I believe we have some common ground because we had a chat before about Northampton, because I worked at the Northampton Chronicle and Echo, and you said when you were a kid you dreamed to work there.
I grew up in Northampton and yeah, that was the local newspaper. I knew someone who did the car reviews, and he always had these amazing cars to drive around in. So as a kid, that seemed like quite a glamorous job working there. But I kind of went off to university. I did English at university, but I didn't really have any kind of career focused mind at all. So I finished university, had no idea what I wanted to do. I was moving to London. That's all I knew I was doing. All my friends were moving to London. And I was looking for a flat, and I was looking in the Loot, and there were like it's a flat newspaper, but they're like two job adverts. And one of them was for this media directory. And I just rang them up and they said they paid me £50 a week, which was not very much even then. This was a long time ago. But I had no other options. Nothing else was going on. I was staying on a friend's couch. So I went for it. And they did say we do have lots of contacts. And so if you do this job for us for a few months, we'll do our best to put you in contact with someone. And they got me a job at a magazine called Charity Finance Magazine. And so for a couple of years there, I suddenly found myself writing about pensions and ethical funds and tracker funds. And I knew nothing about all of this stuff, but it was kind of fun. And yeah, I ended up working at The Guardian. We had a new news editor. I was a new sub-editor, and he took all the sub-editors one by one out to lunch. And I was the last person he took out to lunch. And he said, he wanted to get to know us. And after we talked about how we'd got to where we were, he said, don't take this the wrong way. In some ways, this is a compliment, but you're the least qualified person in this office. He was like, how did you get into this job? And when I look back, it was a lot of taking chances that popped up, being a bit flexible. I started at one point, I remember reading in a magazine, like one of these arty kind of trendy magazines. It was an interview with a commissioning editor at The Independent, and she just said, I'm always looking for pieces. And so I just I sent her in an idea. I had a friend who had his own business, which was a bit mad. I sent her in an idea, and she took it, and I couldn't quite believe it. I remember when it came out, it was like a double page spread in their weekend magazine. We went to the local corner shop, and we bought like 8 copies of the newspaper. It was so exciting. And telling the man in the shop, I've got a piece in here. So yeah, I kind of just kind of stumbled my way through it, to be honest. I kind of knew I could do it. I kind of had a feeling for it. I'd done English at university. I'd always had a feeling for words, but yeah, I've done a lot of not very interesting journalism jobs, a lot of editing, random websites, tried my hand at photography, web design, all sorts of things. So I just kind of, a lot of trial and error, and eventually I ended up writing a book, which was suddenly you move into a new category. You've written a book. You're suddenly a bit of an expert. You've got a bit of kudos, a bit of credibility when you've written a book, and people take you a bit more seriously. So that was a good career move, writing a book.
So did that happen whilst you were working, whilst you were employed?
Yeah, I had a part-time, quite a good setup by then at The Guardian. There was one guy, they offered a job. I was freelancing there, and they offered him the job, but he only wanted to do it half the week. So they offered me the other half of the week, which was perfect for me. So I had two and a half days a week, so 2 days 1 week, 3 days the next week. I was in the office on a staff contract, which left me half the week free to kind of pursue my own things. And I knew I wanted to write a book, but I was mainly feature writing at that point in my other time. And I came up with an idea to go and live in Kenya and run with Kenyan runners. And that took off. That book did very well. And yeah, so but yeah, I got a 6-month career break from The Guardian. They were very good about that, to write the book.
And I guess, this question's going to be for both of you, really, but I'll start with Claire. Like, how much planning went into before you launched your newsletter in terms of who you thought your audience might be and the type of things you thought you might write about and kind of the name of it and the branding and all that kind of, how much preparation did you do before you launched it?
That's a really good question. Actually, first, you really just reminded me of my first byline, and I feel like I just really want to share it with you because it was a joint byline on News Story for the Men on Sunday when I was doing work experience. I should say I grew up in London and I have my parents living here, so I was in the very fortunate situation that I could afford to work at a newspaper for free for quite a long time, longer than I should have probably. And it was a joint byline on a News Story about a local postman who had opened the postbox to collect the mail, and there had been a chinchilla in there, and it caused a local scandal trying to find the owner of this chinchilla. Anyway, I digress. And probably because I'm trying to delay the answer to this question, because the truth is, not a huge amount of planning. I'm a daily features journalist, so there's never much planning goes into anything I do. That's the truth. You know, the idea comes up in the morning and I've written it 6 hours later at most. I did think about the name for quite a long time. I agonized over that. But in hindsight, I probably shouldn't have done. And several people had said to me, the name doesn't matter at all. What matters is you started. So that was probably just a delaying tactic. And I'm lucky enough to be married to a graphic designer. So he did a sort of nice banner for me and, you know, a bit of kind of jazz around the launch. But really not a huge amount of planning other than that. I had written a newsletter before when I was at The Telegraph. And that did encapsulate a little bit of what I wanted to do. I was aware it wasn't the same thing, because I should say Substack is kind of a mistake to think about it as a newsletter, actually. It's so much more than that. It's really a publishing platform, and you could do podcasts, you could do any sort of audio, you can embed video, you can, you know, have chats with your subscribers a bit more like a social media platform. So it isn't just a newsletter. But when I was just starting out, I did, I guess, just start with that sort of very basic to send people something at least once a week. So I had this sense that some of the stuff I'd written in this previous newsletter was slightly more personal, was chattier perhaps than is always possible when you're doing a piece for a newspaper. So I knew I wanted to keep a similar tone. And I just hoped that people who followed me on Instagram, on Twitter, would come along that journey. And then when I'm writing every week, I don't plan that much. Like I have a note in my notes app on my phone where I keep ideas for pictures for newspaper editors, magazine editors, as well as for my Substack. But what's quite nice about having something like a Substack is that you don't have to be tied to the news agenda in the same way. You know, if you have a conversation with your friends, if you just see something that randomly sparks your interest, if you read a good line in an article somebody else has written and you want to riff off it, you can just do that and you've got the freedom to do it. So you don't necessarily have to plan in the same way as being aware of, oh, this is the anniversary of this event, or, you know, whatever you might, you know, this is World Sleep Day, as I think it is tomorrow. And you don't have to tie yourself to those markers in the same way.
Yeah, it reminds me really of the way in which Emma and I do the Freelancing for Journalists newsletter, which is normally Emma sending me a text the day before going, oh, what should I do in the newsletter this week? And like, we do have a running list, but we kind of, you know, that's there in the background, but it is tends to be a lot more spontaneous, or yeah, coming up with something on the day. And Darren Ann, then coming back to you, can you tell us more about kind of how would you call it a newsletter or a blog, how that started? Because you seem to have Substack and Patreon. How does that all work?
Yeah, so I ended up, after my books came out, I ended up setting up these kind of running retreats and also a podcast, and they both came under the same banner, The Way of the Runner. And I'm also married to a graphic designer, so she did me a website. And so then I started a newsletter just for people would sign up to the mailing list, and I started doing a newsletter. And then I read some article somewhere about how newsletters were actually the new thing, and that everybody's writing a newsletter, and journalists are making money out of newsletters. And here it was me just sending it off for free, quite happily. But also because it was tied into those things, it was kind of a bit promotional. And I just love this idea that you could kind of commission yourself, because I, as a freelance journalist, I spend a lot of time, or not so much these days, but when I was really trying to write a lot of features, spent a lot of time coming up with ideas, pitching them, chasing up, trying to get some kind of traction. A lot of it doesn't get picked up. And so you waste a lot of time pitching and being rejected and not getting anywhere, and then coming up with some idea that doesn't go anywhere. But suddenly I could commission myself. I could go, well, I can write what I like here. So that was a really appealing idea. And so I kind of settled on a weekly, I call it Monday Musings. And the idea is I'll just sit down on a Monday and I'll write about the week that's just gone by in my world, in the running world, whatever comes up. And so in terms of planning, there's very little planning, because the idea is it's just me musing on a Monday, whatever's been going on in my week. And sometimes I have thought about things that, oh, I could write about this in the Monday Musings. And sometimes there's been a big event in that week, like either in the world of running or in my own life. I've run a race, for example. That's a big thing to write about. But sometimes it's just, occasionally it's not even about running. It's about surfing or something completely different.
Yeah, it's just interesting that you've got that regularity to it, I think. Because I think one of the things that Freelancing for Journalists, since we launched the newsletter, which was really early on, I can't even remember when we launched it. Was it even 2020?
It was the end of 2020. Right, so, yeah.
I don't think we've missed a week, have we?
Yeah.
And then that's the free version. And now we've got the paid version as well, which the premium version, which I think we are much more rigorous in terms of planning. We've got kind of a more, because I guess you feel, if people are paying premium for a service, you kind of want to make sure that you're providing something extra, something additional. So we kind of plan that quite far in advance and have that kind of on a cycle. Claire, do you feel any pressure, but this could be like self-imposed pressure, I guess, on making sure that there is then regular content coming through the newsletter?
Yes, I definitely do, is the short answer. There is pressure. I think you're right, actually. A lot of it is self-imposed. There's sort of two sides to the pressure. I think there's the side of the commissioning yourself thing, which I agree is a huge part of this. But obviously the flip side of that is you don't have any backup. You don't have an editor, a sub-editor, a lawyer reading anything you write, which can be quite terrifying at times. Although I like to think that we're all experienced enough, you know, that us freelance journalists who are on there to know what we're doing. But, you do have that security blanket when you're writing for a media organisation. And the pressure to publish regularly is definitely there. In fact, until quite recently, I've been publishing probably twice a week. And I was finding that a little bit onerous because I am still in that kind of first flush of freelancing and feeling like I need to pitch and write all the time and find it very hard to say no. So it took me a long time to work up the courage to email people, because you do have paying subscribers and you don't want to let them down, to email people and say, look, I'm going to maybe do a little bit less, but do it better. I hope that's okay by everyone. But I am still doing once a week. And I totally relate to what you were saying about wanting to give, paying premium subscribers more. I tend to, spend longer on those pieces, make them more personal, maybe a little bit longer and in depth, and just try to offer them something that they wouldn't get if they were just free subscribers. But my free subscribers are a very, very important part of what I do as well. I try not to, although the subject matter might be different for my paying subscribers, I try not to think about it too much when I'm writing it, because I do want them both to feel valued. And, there's a lot of people who just simply can't afford to pay at the moment, or who perhaps do what I do actually and kind of jump between subscribing to something for a couple of months and then try something else. And it's nice to have the freedom to do that. And I totally understand that. But it's a hard balance. And there is a lot of pressure there for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's always a work in progress, isn't it? And I certainly know, like with ours, the free one is kind of, we know every week we put something out. And like I say, that's more spontaneous. But with the premium, we've put a lot more thought into that. We've got feedback from both our free and our paid subscribers, and we started it with, I think we were doing like two or three a month, and then we decided actually we need to commit to like every single week. But like you say, you don't want to give too much out in the beginning and then pull back. So yeah, it's all a fine balancing act, and there isn't really a model, I guess, to follow at the moment, which kind of nicely leads me on, because We've talked about Substack, and obviously, we know that that's kind of the biggest platform for newsletters. But Darren Ann, you use Patreon as well, do you? And are you using them both for the same thing?
So I started off on Patreon. So when I came up with this idea it was lockdown was happening and I was getting lots of work cancelled. I had speaking engagements and projects. So I had commissions that involved traveling abroad and I couldn't do those, and so I was getting a little bit like desperate, like there's nothing going on, everything's been cancelled, what am I going to do? And I just read this article about the newsletters, and I just looked around, and at that point Patreon seemed the best fit. I felt like the people who were going to subscribe to me were people who'd read my books and enjoyed my books, and I felt like if I'd said to them, look, I just can't afford to write anymore, they would actually go, oh no, that's terrible. We really love your writing. I mean, because I write about running, a lot of people find it, quite inspiring. It helps them with their running. It helps them to get out there, the motivation. And so a lot of people have written to me and said, oh, we love your writing. It's changed. People say that it's changed their life reading one of my books. And I figured like some of these people might have some money and they would be, slightly upset if I said I just can't write anymore. Lockdown's just broken my system and I can't do it anymore. So I figured this idea of patrons, this old-fashioned idea that goes, about hundreds of years of artists having patrons, and that's where the name comes from, kind of made sense. I felt like a few of these people might sign up and just keep me going through lockdown. But it did kind of take off. And then I guess I just heard about Substack. I started following other people on Substack, reading their Substack newsletters. I think Substack looks a bit nicer. It's a bit easier to use. It's easier to follow it without having to sign up. It looks better when you share it. So somebody just suggested, well, you could put the newsletter on Substack as well. So it's the same newsletter on both. But then on Patreon, I use it to, I have all this, there's all sorts of other things. I have a book club on Patreon. So book members of my Patreon, we once every 3 months, we read a book and then we all get together on Zoom. A glass of wine, and people from all over the world, and we sit down and discuss books. I put up some other some articles for that I wrote years ago that never got published. There was a whole chapter from Running with the Kenyans that never got published because I spent 2 weeks in Ethiopia, and then we decided with the editors that this was was kind of a random sidestep out of Kenya, out of the story, out of the narrative. You're in Ethiopia. But I worked really hard on those 2 weeks in Ethiopia, really difficult, really trying, really interesting. They just didn't fit in the book. But that chapter in whole is up on Patreon. So I was kind of using it not just for the newsletter. The newsletter was one element of it. And then I shared that newsletter on Substack. And that's kind of how I have it now. But of course, as Claire said, Substack is changing and is growing into more of a similar service to Patreon, in that you can do other things with it. And so now it's like I'm like in all of these things, you kind of adapt, change, see how things go. So I have subscribers on both platforms. At the moment, I think people on Substack know they're just getting the newsletter. People on Patreon know they're getting more than the newsletter. But where it goes from here, I'm not quite sure, because in effect, it's like having the same thing on. Now they've kind of become very similar platforms, so it doesn't quite make sense. But I'm not going to like lose my subscribers, and I don't think anybody has signed up to both. So I think people realize it's one or the other.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think I was thinking about this yesterday. You get a lot of sort of podcasts and comedians supplementing their work and income through Patreon. But I don't think that journalists necessarily use that in the same way. Kind of Substack has become that platform. But you do see more and more people doing it. And I think there's something, isn't there, about you finding your niche audience. You don't have to be, you know, as big as the Telegraph, but it's finding your kind of just little niche of readers who are interested in your writing. How have you found kind of building that audience, Claire? How have you gone about, I suppose, finding those readers who are particularly interested in what you've got to offer?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, I tend to assume that the majority of my audience is female. I mean, in fact, I know that from Substack now, because of course you can see all those analytics, which makes it a really great thing to do. You know, my book is on female friendship, so I knew I had a really engaged audience around that, who like to DM me a lot on Instagram and tell me about their friendships and tell me about particular chapters that have helped them through friendship issues a lot of the time. So I knew I had this really sort of engaged female audience there. I was women's editor at the Telegraph, so I knew I had a lot of women who really enjoyed my writing when I was doing that. I've done a couple of podcasts that were kind of women-centric as well, one about imposter syndrome and then another one called BFF around the book about friendship. So I knew instantly that I would have this sort of audience of women who seem to like my writing and find it useful, and particularly friendship advice and for work advice as well. So I knew that I wanted to write about those two things in particular and hope to bring them along. But the rest is just trial and error, really. It's about listening to what people tell you in the comments, what feedback you get. Although, you know, I try not to be, it's a difficult balance, because I like to listen to those comments and take them into account, absolutely. And I ask my readers questions a lot about what they might like to see, what they might be interested in. But at the same time, I tend to find that the pieces that do the best are not necessarily the ones where you try to second guess what people might want to read. They're the ones where you've written openly and honestly and often vulnerably from the heart. So that's definitely a sort of balancing act. But it is just that trial and error thing. And sort of, if you know you've got a couple of subjects that maybe people are engaged with, keep going on those and just throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting, we found there's a couple of kind of ways in which we get super engagement on our newsletters. One is when you write very personally about like something that's been going on with you with your freelancing that week, how you've overcome it, or challenges that you're having, or whenever you write about money, actually. But also things that, if you're writing about, I suppose, the more kind of campaigning ones we've done, where we're talking about getting rid of payment on public aid, you just know that those are the ones that everybody is going to respond to. But sometimes you are surprised. Sometimes you will get that one that you didn't expect would kind of hit so well, and all of a sudden you're getting, you know, floods of emails from people saying, I love the newsletter this week. I'm like, oh, I don't quite know how to recapture that next time. I mean, how do you find, Claire, having enough ideas, I suppose, enough fresh ideas to keep? You know, I've got Lily to go, help me, what am I going to write about this week? But yeah, how do you keep up that flow of ideas?
Yeah, and in fact, that is a big difference, because I've spent my entire career in newspaper offices, and you do have that team around you who you can bounce ideas off all the time. And of course, you can bounce ideas off your husband, off your family and friends, but there are only so many ideas they want to hear from you, quite frankly. And so it is, I don't know, you do just have to trust yourself. I mean, it is hard to constantly generate ideas. I mean, I guess I'm fortunate in that I'm doing that for work all the time anyway. And there will be things that I've maybe pitched to an editor, or I've thought about pitching, but it's not quite worked out for some reason, that I will then draw on for my Substack. I try not to do that too much. And interestingly, it's sort of come full circle now, because there are things I've written for Substack that have then been reprinted in newspapers, or an idea from my Substack an editor has picked up on and come to me to write something wider on it. So there is now this sort of circular economy going on. But I just write things down all the time. Any little quote, any little idea, you know, just constantly jotting things down in my diary. I have a old-fashioned handwritten diary in my notes app. It's just constantly looking. It never stops.
Yeah, I guess it's just like you say. It's something we've said a lot on the podcast is it's keeping a record, isn't it? The idea can strike at any time, so you've got to have a system for logging it. And how about you, Darren Ann? Do you find ideas come easy? I suppose if you're writing about running and you are running, then do you find you have a constant source of ideas?
Yeah, it can be a bit tricky. Like I've been injured recently.
Yeah.
And I realized initially I was writing about being injured and that, you know, the frustration of that. But nobody said it, but I could feel it myself before I got too far down that line that this was going to get a bit boring after a while. But then, yeah, sometimes I sit down, well, I haven't run all week. I haven't paid attention to any running all week. I don't know anything about anything in that week that's happened in the world of running. So it can be, yes, it can, like we were talking earlier about the pressure of a weekly schedule. And sometimes I'm like, oh my God, it's usually worse the day before. I suddenly go, oh my God, it's Monday tomorrow. I'm going to have to write something, because I always write it on a Monday morning. And I've got no idea what I'm going to write about. But then I find when I sit down, I do have a little list of backup ideas that I've jotted down on some weeks where I've had two ideas. I think, okay, this is one for the future. But often it's almost as if the way I think about it is if I was going out for a run with a good friend, we'd start talking about something and eventually we'd get onto some kind of interesting, and I saw this the other day, or I thought I've been really thinking about this. And what do you think? And I feel like sometimes you just need the very nub of an idea. It's not even, it might even seem like it's not that interesting, but if you dig into it and really dig into it, sometimes I feel like, oh my God, where am I going with this? And like the clock's ticking and it's 11 o'clock and I don't have to have it out by a certain time, but it's not really something I want to spend the whole day on. And if I've got to 11 o'clock and this is still a bit like, is this going anywhere? I'm not sure. I can start getting a bit panicky, but so far, I feel like I haven't had to kind of scrap what I've written and start again. It's always, I've always managed to find something worth saying in that nub of an idea. And it can be really simple things, like just the fun of getting lost, or I don't know, some simple thing that you dig into and kind of explore. So yeah, so I have found so far, I haven't run out of ideas, and it's just... Yeah, and I think the name Monday Musings gives me a bit of leeway. It doesn't have to be a kind of groundbreaking piece every day. It's a kind of musings. It's a thoughtful, reflective piece on what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, it's surprising, isn't it? How I've had weeks where I'm like, I don't want to write about this week, and an hour later we've got a newsletter. It's surprising. Yeah. Once you get that kind of little germ of an idea, it's like, yep, I'm on it, done it, yeah. Sorted. I mean, one thing that... we need to talk about really, I suppose, is the balance of how do you juggle this with your other work and kind of, I suppose, what proportion of your income, like, it makes? How you then decide kind of how to charge for your Substack, what's free, what's not free, but yet, you know, that balance of wanting to free yourself up and have time to do it and make it worth your while and produce something good. Claire, I mean, you're kind of early-ish into your freelancing career, so can you talk to us a bit about decisions you've made around that and how you decide kind of how much time to spend on each thing based on the income that it brings you?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, I spoke just before about how I'd sort of gone down from two newsletters to one at the moment. And that really was because I needed to make more time for paid work. That's the truth. You know, I'm still only 18 months into my freelance career. There's a lot going on and I feel quite guilty about it, but it was definitely the right thing to do. You know, the proportion of my Substack income at the moment is very, very small. You know, growing all the time, but small. So, and it's hard, isn't it? Because of course, if you spend more time doing it, probably it'll grow faster. So there is this sort of very delicate balance. I do spend quite a bit of time doing it. You know, I also don't want to spend a full day on it, but I do try and dedicate time to coming up with a nice idea, writing it properly, not just completely dashing it off. You know, because I want my readers to get something out of it. I want them to enjoy it. And I want there to be a kind of two-way element to it as well. I guess that's kind of reflected in the name I chose, Tell Me About It. It is that kind of reflects that kind of eye-rolling thing I do at what's going on for women in the world. But it's also literally Tell Me About It. What do you want out of this? So, you know, if my readers come back to me and say, you know what, this isn't enough for us, it was much better, I'm paying for this, it was better twice a week, I will definitely take that on board. But I felt like I had to sort of, I'd maybe got the balance slightly wrong to start with. And I do need to prioritize some paid work as well, but it's not easy. But, you know, I'm happy to give up my time to do it because I enjoy it. And also because I think it's really worthwhile to, and this sounds really earnest and cheesy, but to bring people together in that way that just writing something in the traditional media doesn't do. So for instance, on Sunday night just gone, actually, I did my first thing that I called a reading hour on Substack, which was just literally to invite people to come log on to a Zoom for an hour and to read in silence together and just make sure that we carve out that time to enjoy our books, because that's something people so often tell me they don't do and they really struggle to do. It falls by the wayside, doesn't it, when we've got really busy lives, you don't sit down with your novel for an hour. And it was really great. It went really fast. We all told each other what we were reading, and it was just a really nice, friendly thing to do. I'm absolutely happy to give up my Sunday night to host that. It felt great. And I did that for all my subscribers, so that wasn't just paying people. So I think I'll aim to do more of that, just things that I genuinely enjoy and get something out of, not just financial. And hopefully other people will get something out of that too and maybe eventually pay for it.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you've used that idea of, yeah, sitting down and reading and Darren Ann's got his book club element to it as well. And that's obviously sort of tapping into, you know, something that perhaps people are missing and kind of using it beyond just the writing. And I just wonder as well, Darren Ann, with yours, you've obviously got the Patreon and the Substack. How did you sort of decide what to charge for that, and again, what is the sort of time and income ratio that you sort of you work out for it, and do you find it feeds into other things that you do as well perhaps?
Yeah, so Patreon is set up in that you can have different tiers, so people can kind of pay, they have a choice of how much they pay, and it was quite interesting because I had like a £3 a month. I think initially £2 a month was the cheapest one, but it went all the way up to £60 a month. And I only put that in there just in case some like billionaire decided they like my work. Or someone did sign up £60 a month, even though they could have only paid £2 a month. So it was that was quite amazing. I do feel I relied quite a lot on that person. But that an array of options. And then when I set up the Substack, which was just the newsletter, I put that up at the lowest rate, which by then had gone up to £3, I think, £3.50 a month. So, yeah, it's not a huge amount of my income, but there's that potential that it can grow and that you still, you know, you'll still put the same amount of work in. But I do enjoy it. There is an element in which I enjoy it. I'm writing what I want to write. I'm writing it without an editor, like, telling me, oh, I've done it wrong. should be writing this or whatever. I'm writing from, it's almost like an exercise in just letting my creativity flow and being, I can be much more creative, I think, than I could with a newspaper or a magazine article. I feel like that's how it's developed and that's what the readers are looking for. So I think perhaps the fact that they know my writing already gives me that leeway to do that, and it seems to work. But so yeah, so the enjoyment means I'm happy to do it, and I'm things like the book club, I'd probably, you know, that's time that I'm probably not really earning any money, but it's fun. But there is also, there's a balance with that. I don't want to, you know, spend the, like I say, I'm trying to get it out on a Monday morning, so I'm not spending the whole day on it, because then it really does become, you know, if you start working it out per hour, and not a very good income, but it has grown, and it has the potential to grow, and I'm enjoying it. So at the moment, it is worth my while. The options are there if anyone very wealthy signs up, and I also have the next highest amount is £20 a month, and I have a few people have signed up on that, and they've been there for like 3 years, paying that much every month, and they often, some of the more active people, they contact me quite a lot through, you know, after that I've published a piece, and they have comments, and they seem quite engaged and happy with it. So yeah, I guess money's relative to you know, for some people £20 a month is nothing, for other people it's a lot. So I do like that option that you can let people choose how much to pay.
Yeah, and I think some people will really want to engage and kind of want that sense of community from what it is you're offering. So it's good for people to kind of have the choices as well. I mean, we found kind of the premium version of both versions of the newsletter kind of slowly, steadily increasing, and you get people that kind of drop out, and you know, it fluctuates, but it goes kind of up and down, and I think it just gives you a bit of freedom and flexibility basically to talk about what you want to talk about, so that's great. The final question that I think does need to come to both of you, but I'm going to ask you to pick one thing, is if someone was coming to you and saying they wanted to start their own newsletter, wanted to self-publish in some way, start their own thing, what one kind of tip would you give them based on what you've learned as you've done it? Claire, we'll come to you first.
I think be prepared to fail, probably. You know, don't be afraid to be flexible, as you just said, to be adaptable. Don't have in your mind that it needs to be this set thing, because as you start to engage with your readers and you get feedback from them, your ideas about what you want to do will change. It sort of goes back to what I was saying before about trying to second guess what people want to read. It doesn't work. When I've tried to do that, those things are some of the worst read I've written. And it's actually when you are flexible, you're open to ideas, you're open in what you're writing, that people really respond to it. So I just think, don't be too fixed in your ideas. Just go for it. Don't hesitate, but be prepared to sort of change as you go along.
Be adaptable. Good tip. Adarinand, what about you?
Yeah, I would say don't be too fixated on making money out of it. I think it is a way of in building up a readership, and it depends. If you already have a readership like I did, I think it's easier, and that people willing to invest in you. But if you don't and you want to build one up, you're going to have to offer a lot of stuff for free. I mean, I think I benefit from having a fairly kind of self-contained subject, in that it's, you know, mostly running, so obviously people who love running are going to be attracted to it. I guess people will unsubscribe, that happens. Try not to take that personally. The Patreon does this thing called exit interviews, where they ask people why they unsubscribed, and usually it's the most common answer, which I don't know whether it's just because it's the least offensive and people tick it, but it's like, my financial situation has changed. That's what most people say. But occasionally you get someone saying, like one person said, I don't think he tries hard enough. He just I sit down every week for the last 3 years and I've written this vicious thing every Monday without fail. So yeah, try not to take those to heart. I guess you will. You, once you're putting yourself, and that's the same for any kind of art form or journalism, you're putting yourself out there. You, some people will criticize you, and
yeah.
I think you have to accept that. I have a thick skin.
And I think it's interesting there that you mentioned as well about, you know, even if you are not known for anything else already, you know, maybe, well, both of you have sort of alluded to this, be prepared to fail, but also to put time into it. Because I had someone do work experience with me recently who said, oh, should I start a newsletter? Everyone says I should be starting a newsletter. And I was a bit like, well, you've only just started, like, you're not really an authority yet. And I know in the past, kind of students were encouraged, you know, set up a blog, show the world what you can do. But I do wonder with a newsletter whether you need to have an audience already, or at least have a very clear expertise in an area. So I'm just going to throw that in as a sub question. I mean, Darren, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, obviously a lot of people writing newsletters, there's a lot of competition out there. People can only read so much. Then, I mean, I subscribe to maybe 6-7 newsletters, so not that many compared to the numbers that are out there. So to just kind of stand out, yeah, it helps a huge amount if you've either got expertise in an area that people are interested in, or you've already got an audience. But saying that, I did feel like, yeah, I wouldn't want to put someone off completely if they're diligent. It, even if they only get a small following, it might be, it's because I feel like it's a writing practice. I feel like it really helps my writing. Sometimes if I don't just do journalism, so I do these running retreats and I do talks, I do the podcast. And so I felt like before I could quite easily go a few months without writing anything, where this kind of discipline of having to write something every week that paid subscribers are going to like, so it's good enough for someone to feel like they it's worth paying for, is a really good discipline. And it really keeps your writing sharp and keeps you kind of honing your craft, because like everything, writing is something you need to practice. You can't just be a good writer without practicing. And it's easy, like Claire was saying, people don't carve out the time to read. If you're not got something like a Substack, you probably don't carve out that time to write as much. You might think, oh, I'll just keep practicing my writing, but who practices their writing? Not many people. But this is a way of doing it. Even if you've only got a small readership, the fact that somebody's reading it is going to make it a bit more high stakes and make you a bit sharper, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Claire, what's your take on that then? If you're just starting out in journalism, is it worth starting a Substack?
I was nodding away through all of that. I completely agree. I think there was a really nice quote a few years ago by Catelyn Moran who said something similar. She said, you know, if you want to be a writer, she was like, I hate people who say to me, I want to be a writer, just write. And, you know, we used to say to people just starting out, well, just keep a blog. I feel like this is the new iteration of that, right? You're completely correct about the discipline. And also not just the discipline of writing and sharpening your writing, which it absolutely does, but the discipline of coming up with ideas. You know, it's so important to be able to do that and have that at your fingertips. And even if you're just starting out, it is really, really good to hone that skill. So I would definitely recommend it to people, while absolutely acknowledging that if, like us, you know, you do have an existing audience, you've published a book, you know, I've done 2 podcasts, I've worked on a national newspaper. I had an existing audience. Of course, that made it much easier for me starting a Substack, that I had people I could bring with me and people who I already knew enjoyed what I wrote. But I think as that learning practice, that forming that habit, and you know, you will get an audience, even if it's a really small one, that's fine. Because, you know, I mean, we've both essentially just admitted that a lot of what we do for fun as well. You know, we're not using this to fund our careers, certainly not at this stage. So if you are enjoying it, then there's absolutely no reason not to do it.
That's fantastic advice, Claire. Thank you both. We're coming to the end now, so we need to do our final bit of admin, which is to ask you both for your recommendation of a piece of work by a freelance journalist. Claire, who are you going to give a shout out to this week?
Well, I hope you don't think this is cheating, but there are so many freelance journalists on Substack that I thought I might just give a shout out to a couple of them. Is that all right? Because, you know, I've only been on it not even a year. I've been on it, what, 8 months now or something. So I'm still finding new people all the time. And there are new journalists joining it all the time, you know, and it is becoming this really great hub for independent journalism. And I kind of jump between who I mean, I follow people who offer free subscriptions. I follow a lot, but I kind of jump between who I pay for. And I'm really enjoying at the moment, the journalist Rosamund Dean does a health-based Substack called Well, 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 which I would heartily recommend to anyone. It's fantastic. Annie Scott does one called Midlife Mess, which I don't know if I identify as midlife quite yet, but she's very funny. She really has a knack for grabbing those topics that you're talking about with your friends and articulating them. You know, she wrote one the other week about sort of why kind of the myth of gratitude, which was really interesting. So I heartily recommend hers. And the other one I wanted to give a shout out to was Francesca Spector, who writes a Substack called The Shoulds, which again kind of picks up on all those things we feel like we should be doing in life, and actually do we really need to worry about that? And she's written one, well, on friendship this week, and I'm quoted in it, so perhaps I'm a bit biased, but her entire newsletter is excellent. Heartily recommend it.
Fantastic. I made a note of all of those, so I'll put them in our show notes. So Darren Ann, what's your recommendation for us?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much, isn't there? Because to be honest, most long-form journalism is written by freelancers. The first one that popped into my head when I saw that question was a piece I read about a year ago on longreads.com. So it's obviously a long read by Devin Kelly, his name is, and it's called Children in the Garden. And it's a piece about that race in New York, the world's longest race, which is 3,100 miles around a half mile block in New York. And he doesn't actually do the race, but he spends a lot of time there. And he really captures, he's also a poet as well as a journalist. So he writes in a quite poetical style, shall we say. Yeah, I really enjoy that piece. So it's called Children in the Garden. It's on longreads.com.
Fantastic. Thank you both. Some really good recommendations. I really love the fact that whenever we do this, we never get the same answer from anybody. Like, it's always something different, which just shows how much there is out there by freelance journalists. So yeah, that's it for this episode. If you want bonus podcast episodes, you can become a premium newsletter subscriber, as we've flagged up many times. I feel like this has been a bit of an advertorial for us. You get an extra weekly newsletter as well. All of our resources can be found on our website, which is freelancingforjournalists.com. And as always, thanks to our producer, Maddie Drury.
Yes, thanks very much, everyone, and goodbye for now.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you. We'll